Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me this evening is my good friend and co-host.
Chad Metz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. A week in which a lot of the things that we have heard about Deadpool and Wolverine were confirmed in said trailer of Deadpool and Wolverine. Your thoughts, sir, on the magical, the mystical, the paradox-filled movie that is going to save the MCU. That would be Deadpool and Wolverine.
I do want to hit on the saving the MCU part towards the end of this, but my overall thoughts on the trailer is it looks exactly like I guess we were promised when this whole concept of Hugh Jackman coming back as Wolverine and doing a movie with Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool. It looked like that's exactly what we're getting. The irreverence of the previous Deadpool movies with Wolverine in a a more downtrodden Wolverine. He's not quite Logan downtrodden, thank God, but he seems to be that way, and Deadpool doing what Deadpool does to that type of character, which is annoy the shit out of them. And they put Wolverine in a comic accurate costume that people seem to like. We still have not seen the mask, and I think they're trying to save it. I am not sold that they will be able to save the mask shot until the movie. I think we'll see it before then, but they're trying their damnedest right now to not give it to us. But yeah, it looks like a fun Deadpool movie with Wolverine. Now the questions are, what exactly is the story? There are hints between the previous trailer and this one. To me, it seems like it's going to be a mix of Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe, which was a comic series in which he does pretty much that. But in this case, subbing the Fox X-Men universe for the Marvel Universe and Old Man Logan, which people will know that the movie Logan is supposed to be loosely an adaptation of Old Man Logan. But there are things
Doesn't
in
but yeah, doesn't Old Man Logan include Deadpool and or Spider-Man? Or am I thinking of another comic book run where like Spider-Man and Wolverine are in a car driving around?
it's not, and that one is not Spider-Man. Now, it's been a long time since I've read that one, but Old Man Logan is basically a cross-country ship with an old Wolverine and an old Hawkeye, an old blind Hawkeye. And yeah, because when Logan was coming out and they started doing like Old Man Logan, we were like, you can't do Old Man Logan because there's a bunch of stuff in there that you can't do, like the inbred Hulks and the dead giant man, big dead giant man skeleton, because Fox didn't own those things. But surprise, surprise, Marvel does. And we get a little hint of that with the big giant man skull that we see in this trailer. So and the fact that we see Wolverine and Deadpool in the car talking, and it looks like they're actually going to be going on some sort of journey that harkens to Old Man Logan. So I think it's going to be a mashup of those two things in the MCU. And we'll see, we'll go through a journey of, I don't know how they're going to incorporate all the Fox stuff, but we saw in this trailer, you see the ruins of the Fox, the 20th Century Fox logo in the desert that they're fighting in, peppered in
I
through
think
the trailer.
which I think it's the I think that they're gonna prune them. I think that's kind of what I the vibe it's giving to me is that that is the land in which people who have been pruned in which people have been pruned would go. And that's why it's big and vast and full of like other objects. 'Cause if you remember it the wasteland in Loki season one looked very similar. Once, that Morbius and Loki got, pruned, and also the giant cloud monster that we see that Kang had used to win the war, that was also briefly seen in the trailer.
That I missed the cloud monster, but it being the void would make sense, especially because when I think that's where the giant man skeleton is, and the Fox character that we don't get close ups of, but I know Pyro from the first X-Men movies, he's in there. There were shots they think it's Calypso from X-Men United, maybe Toad, and a few others that are standing. I think they're standing in front of the giant man skeleton. So
isn't Stryker's female Wolverine in there too somewhere?
Lady Deathstrike. People are saying that's her too. We can't confirm a lot of these because they're so far away. But
right, but the sense. Idea, yeah, the idea would make sense because again, what is it if the TVA is actually just capturing and pruning Fox mutants, and sending them to the void? Like, here's the thing for me, and this is what I've like tried to scour the internet's trying to figure out. I think they don't have to scrap the Kang story. I think that they can still go that direction with or without Jonathan Majors. That's fine. And I think they can still get to Secret Wars. And because the fact of the matter is, they're angling for a reboot of the timeline, is essentially what they're going to do. This is what Kang set out at the end of Loki season one. There was a war, there was a multiversal war. We all chose sides. I came up with the cloud monster. I won. I consolidated the timelines. And now I am the Time Lord. And like, if you kill me, all the timelines will go back to being dispersed, and more versions of me will show up, and we'll be right back in the same situation where we have to have a multiversal war in order to reconsolidate the timelines. There's no rule saying that the champion from Earth 616, which is the designated MCU timeline, is the person who has to win the battle. Like, it could be someone from an alternate universe that isn't the Fox universe, isn't the Disney, the MCU universe, and unites all of them in a new timeline in which, for better or worse, things like mutants exist. For example, the timeline Spectrum,
mm-hmm.
from Captain Marvel. The scene ends up with her mom is now got both Bengals and is there with Beast, Kelsey Grammer's Beast.
Uh-huh.
But we don't know that it's actually the Fox universe that she landed in. It could be that universe that ends up winning and consolidating everything. And now you've got a universe where mutants have existed forever, making it easier to do an X-Men movie. You're doing a Fantastic Four movie that is set in the 1960s that allegedly involves Galactus and the Silver Surfer. So, like, there are pieces and pockets of the MCU that they're exploring. And to me, like, Deadpool is going to be a very good way to do the timey-wimey stuff and get people adjusted to that while also not having to fully abandon the Kang of it all.
Yeah, I don't think they need to get... I've always said I don't think they need to get rid of Kang. The whole point was that there are different versions of Kang. Yes. All the versions we've seen so far have looked like Jonathan Majors. One, who's to say that other versions don't look like him? Two, it's not like you haven't replaced people, the same character with different people and continue
I'm here.
On.
I'm here. Deal with it.
Yeah, that's the first one, Don Cheadle. But hell, we've had a whole other hope for over 10 years now, but that was not the original one. So it's not like you can't do that and people won't accept it. So,
but we're also at the point, Chad, where we're going, by the time we get around to doing anything major, it'll be 8 years since an Avengers movie.
True. Which, coming out of Endgame, I was always like, yeah, you're going to take some time away from Avengers. And at this point, Avengers is not, it's not like the first movie that was the team movie. Avengers seems to be the event movie. So it builds to the event. It's less about the team and more about the event. So I knew we weren't going to get an event for a while. So I knew we weren't going to get Avengers movies for a while. I did not think it would be 8 years, but you know,
well, COVID played a factor in that, right. and then the rebooting of the time, like everything with majors and all of that, you know, because I think what people misunderstand is like that the quality of Marvel projects has diminished. It hasn't. It is the abundance of them that has proliferated and spread their resources super freaking thin. And we can thank the idea of streaming for that, because they had to all of a sudden incorporate 10 TV shows into their thinking. And some of those came away with, you know, not great results, CGI wise and other things. So they can still get to whatever an Avengers 5 looks like. And we all know that they're going to get to a Secret Wars, whether that's with Sam Raimi or not. I hope not. And I don't know what it looks like, but I think we're going to get there. And I think we're going to, you know, we're going to include Shang-Chi. And I think we're going to include this new batch, because it appears that Captain America Civil War Captain America Brave New World, as we're going to talk about here in a minute, looks like it's going to reintroduce the idea of the Avengers. And kind of put Sam Wilson in that Nick Fury role of trying to assemble folks. And we also have the beautiful idea of Catherine Newton and other young Avengers coming together for their own mission. So that's also something that's on the radar as well.
There are a lot of ways they can go with it. I don't know exactly what they're going to do outside of, we know, you know, the next few movies
we'll probably get something at con. Like, you're going to be coming off a big box office weekend with Deadpool and Wolverine. I think that's the one thing no one can dispute. This movie will be a box office boon, and if you're coming off of that, you want to capitalize on that momentum. Announcing some more projects and a retooled lineup for 25 and 26 may not be a bad way to go.
But do you want to announce more projects when the perception right now is that they've announced all these things and almost none of them have gone right. Like, Captain America's coming in February. They've had to do reshoots that people are saying they're changing entire points of the movie. And that Deadpool's the one that nobody's saying anything, you know, that about, which, by the way, I know somebody, I think I told you, I know somebody has seen it, and they're a big fan. Thunderbolts, which I've been saying for a long time, that movie's not going to see the light of day. Apparently, they're shooting it right now. Blade is supposed to be coming out. We don't know nothing about that. But
that's exactly my point. You use it as a jumping off point. There's nothing saying you have to announce projects for 27, 28, and 29. Kevin Feige can step on that stage in Hall H and say, we are here to talk about 2025. And you've got enough projects in 2025 to talk about and show footage from that can capitalize on the momentum of Deadpool and Wolverine. And if you want to end the presentation with a retooled Avengers 5, whatever that looks like, cool. But you don't have to. I just can't see them not capitalizing on the momentum after 3 years of being gone from Comic-Con, or 2 years from being gone from Comic-Con. And, you know, their first big box office win since Doctor Strange.
See, that I agree with. I would focus big time on what's coming almost solely in 2025. And if I wanted to make some announcement,
whatever. I'd do an official title for Avengers 5.
Yeah, that's
because it. It's no longer Kang Dynasty. It's going to be something else.
Yeah, that's it. So I wouldn't go beyond Avengers, but everything that's supposed to be coming in 2025, movies particularly, TV shows secondarily, focus on those, give you that Avengers title and get out. Especially if Deadpool hits the way it should hit. Really, if it hitting at all with the current state of the box office is going to be helpful for everybody else, but particularly Disney needs for the perception of Marvel, they need it to be like massive. I don't know.
Which right now, massive is 700 million worldwide.
See, that was my question. I don't know what massive if to people. I think you're right. I think 700 million. I mean, granted, we don't know the budget, but 700
Oh,
million.
come on. We know Bienville was given like $200 million to do Dune. And the popcorn bucket alone costs another $100 million to market.
Did they have spend that much on that bucket? I mean, I saw like a picture of the bucket, and then people talked about the bucket, and it got shown up everywhere. I think the market for the bucket was fairly cheap. It's just it's so ridiculous that everybody was talking about
It works for me. I own one.
it. Of course you do. Of course you do. But yeah, I think 700 million would be a success. I think it shouldn't. I think it'll make more than that. I don't think it's going to make a billion. And if people are expecting it to make a billion, that's going to be trouble. I'm just, the days of automatically expecting things to hit a billion are pretty much over. A few years ago, I would have said, in the same predicament, I would have said, Avengers might hit a billion, everything else might not. At this point, I don't even know if I can safely say Avengers will hit a billion because, like you said, it'll be 8 years since the last one by the time we get the next one. So I don't know. With these movies, I think getting over 600 million should be a success. Anything over that is just like gravy. Like two movies a year hit a billion, and I think that's where we're kind of at now.
And that's fair. But I mean, like, this trailer sparked interest again, which is good. And I think it will help them only having the one movie in 2024. But like, you know, Sony's out here doing their damnedest to like, hey, bring people back into the Spider-Man world by randomly putting out all seven Spider-Man movies into theaters over the course of 7 weeks. And B, doing Kraven and Madame Web and Venom 3, which they're now moved up because they didn't want to inspire election stress. So, yeah. Venom 3, The Last Dance.
With Sony, the thing is, I forget that Kraven's coming out. And Kraven and Venom are coming out kind of close together. And yeah, I think
one's in August and one's in October.
Right. And I think Venom's going to make the money that it makes because people like Venom. You don't have to like those movies. They make money. I'm cool with Venom as it is, as much as I can be. It's the Kraven thing that's killing me. But that goes with what you were saying with the Spider-Man movies. Me, a huge Spider-Man fan that likes going to the movies, I didn't readily know that the originals were going back in. I saw it in passing, and then I would see, yeah, it's in theaters right now. It's making this much money. I would have entertained going to see either of those movies so far. And maybe now I'll pay more attention when the other ones come out. But I don't get what Sony's doing. Like, if you're going to do it with as much fanfare as you can. And for people that are in movie circles to not really know, that's not enough fanfare. People that follow movies should know that these are coming to theaters. If the general audience knows, that is gravy. But if you can't even get it to the point where we know, consistently know, that you're putting the movies out in the theaters, you are failing.
Especially with somebody like Aaron Taylor-Joy,
Aaron Taylor-Johnson.
Johnson. Like, especially with somebody who's like kind of a brand name with that, you know?
Yeah, that's the craving of it all. That
you can't do Last Hunt without Spider-Man. Damn it.
No, you can't. Well, for a Last Hunt, you would think you'd have a First Hunt, which I guess is what this is. But I mean, Last Hunt Kraven is a bitter old man. And I know Aaron Taylor Johnson, I still think of him as like a kid when he's like in his 30s. But he is, like, even though he's in his 30s, he is not like the old crotchety Kraven that's going to eat a shotgun bullet to finish off the story. But They're insistent on doing it, and they're about to ruin Kraven and Rhino again so that they can't be in a Spider-Man movie, because they got to get the stink off them. They got to go sit in the corner for a few years to get the stink off them.
Which is what we've done with Fantastic Four as well.
Yep.
Like, we've had to put Fantastic Four in the corner for a hot second.
We've had to put X-Men in the corner for a hot second. The fact that the show, X-Men 97, is absolutely killing anything that Fox did, I'll give them the first two movies. But after that, it's shameful. It is shameful.
Especially when Feige's out here talking about how he'd like to make it canon.
I mean, hell, he can. We're in the era of multiverses. Everything is canon until nothing is.
Until only that which is tied together is.
Yeah.
But can I tell you the one thing that I was most excited to see in the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer?
What's that?
Vanessa. Because you know why? Because Vanessa is alive. And do you know why Vanessa is alive? Vanessa is alive because there was a complete and total reboot at the end of Deadpool 2 that made Deadpool 2 basically not mean absolutely jack shit. I watched this character go on an emotional journey for almost 2 hours to lead to absolutely dog shit because, again, he saved Vanessa's life and therefore none of the rest of it mattered.
Pretty much. Can't argue with any of that.
So now the TVA is going to come to him, and the TVA is going to come to him, and the TVA is going to be like, we're pretty sure that the end of the world is coming, and your universe might be incurred upon, and you might lose everything if you don't help us. And then he's going to help them, and he's going to stop an incursion, and he's going to once again keep everybody safe. And then they'll probably find some kind of post-credit stinger way of making it all irrelevant. Because again, it may just all be a dream.
Oh, they can Dallas it. It's Deadpool. He can be in the shower, and Vanessa walks in, and it's just a whole Dallas thing. That can be what happens. I don't think that's gonna happen, because we are now in the phase of multiverses matter. So we need to move this stuff along to get out of this. So we can't just be irrelevant, like irreverent.
I think this is going to be what people wanted Multiverse of Madness to be. I think people were very pissed off because Multiverse of Madness only went to one universe, and it wasn't very grand or opulent or different. Red means go, green meant stop. That was about as like unique and different as it got. And yeah, you got your Illuminati for the first time in the MCU, but they all died very quickly at the hands of Scarlet Witch.
Very quickly.
So, like, that didn't even count. Them getting their fanboy casting for Mr. Fantastic didn't last but maybe 2.5 minutes. Like, it was a whole thing. And so I think a lot of the embitterment, the movie's awesome, and I love it, and I think it takes a lot of good chances, and I think it does right, somewhat right, by the character of Wanda. I don't think it does as much justice as some other things it could have done. But I think that movie just suffers from fan expectations of universe hopping, which they really don't do. And this is going to universe hop. It's going to bring in Vanessa, you know, it's going to bring in Jennifer Garner as Elektra. It's going to bring in Ben Affleck as Daredevil. It's going to bring in, you know, it's going to bring in Lady Deathstroke. It's going to bring in.
Wait. You think Affleck's in this?
I know Affleck's in this.
I will enjoy that. On a quick side note, the fact that Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner still, like, I know they have kids together, but the fact that they can work and function together like this is kind of amazing to me. That's just me, and I don't know who else thinks that, but
It was his longest lasting and healthiest relationship outside of his J-Lo relationship.
Well, and the fact that he's back married to J-Lo, and it's going to be weird seeing him as Daredevil, and I'm sure he's going to interact with her as Elektra, and that's how they freaking met. And it's going to be 2002 all over again. Meanwhile, J-Lo's probably sitting on the set watching this crap happen, and I'm going to be sitting there like, none of this should compute. None of this should actually happen, but this is the real world, and this is actually a thing. But again, that's just me. It's just my little thing. So I'll just keep that to myself till I see it on the screen, and then I'll talk about it a little bit, and I'll just put it back over there to be gone forever.
I think this went over what bigger for me than the Joker trailer. I mean, I don't like that movie is exactly what I thought that movie was going to be. So like, there's no real like thrill for me in seeing the pretentious assholes start singing instead of just dancing this time.
Did we talk about that crap?
We did not.
Okay. My quick thoughts on the Joker trailer. Again, much like the first movie, it looks very well put together. Like it's going to be a well-produced and excellent and expertly crafted movie. I'm interested in it because of the different things they're going to do with the singing and Lady Gaga. But again, at the end of the day, like you just said, it feels like a bunch of it feels like a bunch of pretentious assholes trying to take comic book stuff out of the muck and make it high art. And watching the trailer, I can say I only feel that way about the dudes. I don't feel that way about Lady Gaga. I think Lady Gaga is just doing a good performance. The other ones are the ones I'm like, y'all are here because y'all don't think stuff is good and you're trying to get your rocks off by making it better.
Here's my thing. I think that Gaga is still recovering from missing out on an Oscar for A Star Is Born. And I think she has spent her career to this point after that trying to win an Oscar. And I think she tried to do that with House of Gucci. No one saw House of Gucci. No one liked House of Gucci. The performances by everybody were way over the top, not just Jared Leto. It was crazy. And she didn't get the awards traction that she was hoping for. And so she saw Joaquin dance his way to an Oscar and act his way to an Oscar for literally just being skinny and dancing. And so if she figures if she puts her singing talent together in a musical, in a comic book genre, with this iconic character of Harley Quinn, that she can put herself in that same conversation the way that he did with the original. And I think that she thinks she has a really good shot at it and that this will help her. The downside to it, from my perspective, is that you're putting this performance out there in October, whereas ideally most of your Oscar stuff is like November, December. But Warner Brothers isn't a newbie stranger to the, to the Oscar game. They know how to run a campaign, so they will be able to frame one for her. And I think that's what it is. That's the motivation for her. It's not love of Harley Quinn. It's not love of the material. It's not love of superheroes. It's putting herself in the best position possible to win an Academy Award and have that on her resume. And I think that that's something she's earnestly wants and she's earnestly trying to get. Same way Bradley Cooper's earnestly trying to get it. Hell, I was surprised Bradley Cooper didn't go to Scorsese and be like, let me play this Jesus dude for you. Just give it to me. Let me play Jesus for you. You'll win an Oscar. I'll win an Oscar. It'll work out for everybody. But, like, that's what it is. I don't blame anybody. It is.
I completely agree. I mean, this is her, again, Oscar, you know, Oscar push. But even with that, it just doesn't, like, I know that to be true. I don't think she has any kind of like great reverence for Harley Quinn. I don't think anybody has to have reverence for these comic book characters. Just because I love them don't mean people that portray them have to love them. I think they have
except for the dude who ends up portraying Captain Planet. I need whoever ends up portraying Captain Planet to be wholly bought into environmentalism and saving the planet.
Look, you've already got the best on-screen Captain Planet you're ever going to get with Don Cheadle. No, sir.
Leonardo DiCaprio finishing off his award-winning career by playing Captain Planet in a Captain Planet in the Planeteers movie would be just the most awesomest.
If you couldn't get Leonardo DiCaprio to go ahead and play Lex Luthor, there's no way you're getting Leonardo DiCaprio to paint himself blue, especially at this point in his life, where he's outright giving young actors the advice of don't do a superhero movie. I think it's done. It's pretty much over. Unless he can just get the check for just being the voice, I think that's pretty much over. But for any actor playing a superhero role, I think you just have to respect the material. You don't have to love it. You don't have to like be completely reverent to it, but just respect it as like the character that you're portraying and the art form. And I think this is just me, my own feelings. I'm projecting on her. I know I'm projecting on her and everyone else. I think that she at least respects the character that she's playing and what the source material is. I don't think the rest of them do. I think they are making it respectable.
I mean, they did lock people in a subway car and make them piss on the side of the car. So, you know, it's not like they're above, you know, doing reproachable things.
Right.
But I mean, it's just interesting to me that that's where Warner Brothers has chosen to put its resources in the midst of this vast, you know, hostile takeover of Zaslav. But we'll see.
Yeah, I am intrigued to see how this turns out, no matter what.
And again, let me reiterate for the record with Marvel and the MCU. Let me reiterate for the with the MCU. The guy who is doing Fantastic Four, who is the guy who did WandaVision, Matt Sackman, a former child actor himself.
Mm-hmm.
That dude has got experience now doing Godzilla. So, like, he not only has the experience of having directed a Marvel television show, and probably one of the better Marvel television shows, he also now has the benefit of working on scale with the Godzilla movie, the Godzilla television series, which also had an amazing scope to it in American amazing character work, where he worked with both Kurt Russell and Wyatt Russell on that project. So he knows how to direct stars. He knows how to direct budget. He knows how to direct action. Cross that over with story, and you get somebody who I think will be utterly qualified to direct a Fantastic Four movie that has heart and action.
I hope so. If they do that, I think it'll be a good one.
I was over the moon pleased that Legendary was like, yeah, sign us up. We'll sign with Apple Plus again, and we'll do another season of Legacy of Monsters, and we'll do another couple of spinoff shows from the Monster Universe. That's cool. It is absolutely amazing to me that we live in the year of our Lord, 2024, and here we are, 10 years post like the heyday of the DCEU, and the most successful shared universe outside of Marvel is Legendary's Monsterverse. The Dark Universe has come and gone. The DCEU has come and gone. Even the Breakfast Cereal Monsters Cinematic Universe has come and gone. The only thing that is left is the MCU and the Monsterverse, and both are highly successful and highly profitable. See Kong versus Godzilla, New Empire, rescuing the box office for the last month.
I need to see that, but I'm not going to see it until it comes on HBO Max. So hopefully I won't see it until like August, because it does not need to be in a home venue for a while.
You mean Max, sir. Max. No HBO, just Max.
Yeah, just Max. Like that.
So let's
dumb.
So let's talk about theatrical windows, because the box office, it'd be struggling. It'd be giving you original stuff, but no one's showing up for the original stuff.
Oh boy. Oh man, it's like I haven't actually looked into it, but I've heard, you know, that the box office has been struggling. And then just when we get before we got on, I pulled up numbers from the numbers website, because they are our preferred website now that Box Office Mojo is with the paywall gimmick. And man, it is bad. Still so bad. So
according to the year over year, is down 20% from a year ago. And it is sitting right now on average of about $7.9 million a film, whereas the average last year was $15 million a year per film. The highest grossing film to date is Dune Part 2. The highest grossing film a year ago, obviously, was Barbie. Week after week, we are down 14% for the week of the 12th through the 18th, and that is a 40% drop from the 5th through the 11th. The total box office gross for the April 12th through the 18th window was 90 million. The weekend before that, the 5th through the 11th, the total box office was 105. The weekend before that, March 29th through April 4th, the top 10 total gross was 176 million. So just in the last 3 weekends, we've gone from 176 to 105 to 90 million.
That ain't good.
No, and you're looking at Godzilla, New Empire, winning the box office the last 2 weeks, and Civil War winning it last week.
And
the weekend, the last 2 weeks.
And are those worldwide numbers, or?
These are just the domestic box office.
Okay, just domestic, okay. Either way, have a lot of people been talking about?
There are some low numbers in here. For example, the week of February the 26th through February 1st, we had 72 new releases. Your total top 10 total gross was 56 million. The following 2 weeks, your box office gross was 66 million. The week of February 23rd through the 29th, 68 million. We have had 5 weekends out of the 15 weekends of the year that were under $100 million total gross for the top 10.
So what that tells me is that all of the studios made the wrong decisions during COVID. As we said, and lots of people said before, COVID accelerated things that were going to happen anyway. The drop off in theaters and box office have been coming for years now anyway, but it went from, you know, thing that were probably taking like 10, 15 years to get to a critical mass to taking 3. And right now, the COVID taught people that if you stay home, you will see these new movies sooner than later. And that has been the case. I've been saying for shit almost years now, they gotta change the release window. They have to change the release window. This 45 days is not cutting it, because people like movies. I think people still like movies, and I think it all show that all shows up when these movies finally get to streaming and they get like peak numbers when they finally get to streaming service that first the first week and then however long after that. They just don't want to go and spend the money at the movies to do it. But they will do
So,
it if it's a if they consider it to be a big event film. See Oppenheimer and Barbie last year. If it's not that, then they will just sit home and wait it out.
last year, in the first 15 weeks of the year, you had 1, 2, 3, 4, only 4 weekends. In the that were sub 100 million for the total top 10 gross, and none of those were the lowest of those was 73 million compared to this year, where the lowest of those was 55 million total. Your top 10 grosses from those same 3 weekends last year, April 14th through the 20th, the 7th through the 13th, and the 31st through the 6th of April, 183, 278, 182.
And what time frame was that again?
The same 3 weekends that this year you had not 176, 105, and 90.
What came out last year around the same
Mario.
time? Okay, that's what I thought. I was gonna say it makes it hard to judge, but then again, I don't think it does. They put something that people got motivated to go see. Mario made $1 billion. I think it's just Mario and Barbie that made $1 billion last year. Oppenheimer did not, I know, but it was close. But I don't think anything else domestically did.
Right now, as of right now, the month of April has the cumulative growth gross of 331 million, 331.4 million. Last April, the cumulative gross was 900.8, and the year before that, it was 571.0. So we're sitting at 331. With about a week and a half left, it's not going to get anywhere close to 900 and may fall short of 571.
I would like to know what the studios are thinking the reasons are for this right now. Like, why haven't they done
Always good.
this?
That is always going to be funny to me. 2018, the month of April with Infinity War, 1,026.26. 0.026. With Endgame the following year, 1.034 billion. The month of April 2020, $52,015.
Yeah, that was a month into everything
That was
being
4 weeks
shut
into COVID. Yeah, that
down.
was 4 weeks into COVID, $52,000.
Man, what a hit. What a hit. But yeah, that changed
Oh,
everything.
by the way, that $52,015 was a 32 made up 32.4% of the total box office gross for the year of our Lord 2020.
It was a time. It was a time I never want to go back to. Boy, was it. I don't know how they fix this. I have ideas, but they don't seem
Budget
interested in them.
has to be a factor. Like, we have to have conversations about budgets. I
Right,
mean,
but
again, there's no reason why an Indiana Jones movie should cost $300 million to make.
there is no reason. But that one, anything that came out last from last year, they shouldn't have had. Them not having the budget conversations, okay, I get. But like going forward, like this year going forward, I have not seen a lot of people say that that has been a sticking point with studios. Nobody's really talking about their budgets, much like nobody's talking about the release window, which I cannot fathom why they have not actually like officially sat down and were like, we can't release things like this. Like,
Because they're
Barb.
also talk because they're also talking about labor stoppages and the fact that like the strikes happened and it impacted their input their output in the second half of the of 2023. But again, that shouldn't like account for all of the drop off.
No, but that's how they're going to paint it, so they don't come out looking like, you know, bad guys for stopping their whole industry for 6 months so soon.
8 months,
after,
and it's eight months, yeah, and it's right. And it's still worse because now they're talking about more strikes potentially. But the industry, 4 months after the strikes have been over, 6 months after the strikes have been over, has still barely even crept by. I follow a lot of writers and staff writers who aren't getting hired. They don't have any work. They've taken like two pitch meetings since the strikes were over. And they understood when it was the holiday season, but after the first of the year, nothing really got going as much as everybody thought it would. And there's a thought process in Hollywood that it may be intentional, that the studios might be limiting the output in an effort to prepare or force another to prevent another strike.
I understand not wanting to have another strike. There are other ways to not have a strike, you know, pay people. But the end goals for studios is not to make art or to make these things. Their end goal is to do like any other company, is to increase revenue for their shareholders. So that as long as that is the business's guiding principle, we're always going to be like, things like strikes are going to happen because it is in their best interest to not pay them to supposedly get more money. But I think that's short-sighted and stupid, but that's neither here. I'm not going to go too deep into that. When you don't have what, like, we, if you're just keeps compounding things, because we had COVID that screwed everything up. We had the rush of streaming off of COVID that is continuing to screw things up. We had the work stoppages, which are cutting out the input that they had going. And then you're worried about more of that. Why keep compounding all these things when the industry has not recovered from COVID? It's not going to recover to a pre-COVID measure. So how are you would think you would want to stabilize the industry to get to a new base level and then figure out how to navigate that level. What they're doing is they keep crippling the new base level. So when all the dust settles, if there is an industry, it's going to be hobbled. And now the work that they're going to have to do is like tenfold. I understand why they're doing it, because again, shareholders, but it just, it makes everything worse in the end.
Indeed. And it's not benefiting the consumer at all. And it's not benefiting the artistic community at all. It's just benefiting the revenue sources for multi-billion dollar corporations who can shove art and put it on the shelf and never allow anybody to see it because they can use it as a tax write-off.
Yeah, the introduction of the tax write-off for these things is really, it's probably going to be more of a thing, and that's so terrible.
Well, I mean, there are 1,000 of those that creative CPAs have been able to exploit for the last 50 years. Like,
but not to the extent of this. Like,
yes, but it's offshore accounts. It's all this stuff. Like, if you closed even half of the loopholes that exist in the corporate tax code, you would bring in exponential amounts of money to the federal government that would start downplaying some of this debt that we've accrued over the last 50 years. Like, they just don't want to do it because, again, it benefits the corporations to have the loopholes so that they don't have to pay as much in taxes. Because, again, we have this wonderful idea that corporations are benevolent and corporations will take the money that they save and spend it on capital expenditures or spend it on their employees, and their employees will take that money and go and spend it into the go ahead and spend it in the economy. But it never works out that way. It always just ends up back in the Cayman Islands somewhere. So, like, you know, it's loopholes shouldn't exist, and they should exist for every bracket of the tax code, but they should not exist to such an extent where they're no longer whole. They're, you know, the La Brea tar pits.
This whole situation is just frustrating because, well, to me, it just there are things that happen beyond anybody's control, and then people made everything worse.
Yeah. I mean, in the industry did it to itself, Chad, because the industry allowed corporatism to take over. They allowed giant media companies to be created, like Time Warner, to come in and buy stuff up. And that's when you stop having, say what you want to about Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and say what you want to about all the other heads, studio heads of the golden age of Hollywood. At least they were in it for the art. You know, you run into this hardcore period, and then after the hardcore period, corporatism in the 70s takes over and the 80s takes over. And now you've got corporate run studios, which is where you end up with shareholders dictating this thing or that.
I am not going to go into the politics of it because you said in the 80s. And I'm like, well, what happened in the 80s and made it that way? I'm not going to go into that. That's not the podcast for this. All I'll say, like dealing with the here and now. I mean, I think the very least they can do is at least fix the whole release date thing. If they did that, at least it would make some things better.
It would, but then it benefits them to have this stuff on their streaming service. But it benefits them to have it there. But my issue is, you know, you're conditioning the audience to wait, and then the audience isn't really paying anything for it. Like, this isn't like the before days in the COVID where you paid $35 for Black Widow. Like, it's not behind a paywall. It comes with your subscription. So, like, you're not making extra revenue off of it once it hits your streaming service.
And but see, that's the thing. The whole reason why they're all losing money on streaming is streaming doesn't bring in enough extra. Streaming doesn't keep gaining revenue at the rate that, you know, satisfies corporate overlords. They kind of get to a number and they kind of stay there. No matter what you bring in, you don't move the needle enough to do these things. So why rush to put it on your streaming service when you don't? Like, you don't have to. What you want to do is you will want to at least double dip, but ideally triple dip. But and by that, I mean, you want them to see it somewhere else first that they got to pay money for.
Yeah.
And then get it on the streaming service.
You want the old school model in addition to streaming. You want to have it in the theater. Then you want to have a VOD release / home video release. And then you want to put it on streaming.
Right.
Ideally, somewhere around 8 to 10 months after its initial release.
Right. And I mean, that's not the home release window. That's not how it used to. Well, that's not how it was pre-COVID. Like, from the release window shrank from, I always go to Batman because Batman was the first one I remember in my lifetime that was in theaters. And then the same calendar year, it was 6 months, it was around Christmas that it came out on home video. So from that point, it has shrank from 6 to probably about 4, somewhere around there. But once COVID hit, it was like, you know, a month, you can get it in some form or fashion at home. With everyone, with the streaming services and everyone having access to the streaming services, particularly like with Max.
And the death of physical media.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, they're killing that. It's pretty much dead. Which is, as I look at all the DVDs and Blu-rays on my shelf, it makes me sad. But with the way that goes, I think what it is too little. Oh, because Max, when they bring it on to Max, they put it on HBO at the same time. There used to be a gap between, you know, home and HBO. HBO, getting it to HBO, it was almost a year. It was probably about 10 months. I think you need to bring some of that gap back. Like, it should not hit streaming services. You're probably back at like 6 months. It can hit like VOD after, I would really say, closer to 3 months, because 2 months is almost, 45 days is entirely too small a window.
Which is where they're at right now.
Right, because you can know the movie's coming out, forget that it's coming out, and then be like, oh, snap, it's already on VOD when you're scrolling through things. If it's, I want to see that movie, I forget about it, oh, that movie's out, I'll wait for it to get on VOD, and the normal time you wait is like 2 weeks, and it's like, oh, it's still not on VOD, but it's in the movies. Okay, I'll go see it. They might go see it at a matinee price or discounted price, but you got that money for them to go see it. And then you can kick it out. You kick it down another 4 months. Bam, it's on streaming. You've gotten the money two ways. Right now, everybody's just waiting for streaming. That's just what it is. I do think Max has done. Max, they are hit and miss because there's no steadfast rule. I think they did a good job with Barbie because Barbie didn't hit VOD for months. And then it was like
same thing Disney did with Avatar. Avatar didn't hit Disney Plus till like the next October.
Well, I mean, even before they had that step in the middle where it hit VOD. I forget how long it was for Barbie. I know it was longer than 45 days, but Barbie didn't hit HBO Max until
Max,
December.
Sir, Max.
It's like this is not as bad, but akin to Twitter, because I'm never going to call it X. And Max is just stupid. But again, you're right. It is Max. But yeah, I don't think it touched Max until it had to be November, because it was before Color Purple, which was in December. So that's like what came out in July. It's still like 4 months. I think that was the best release strategy that I'd seen to that point. I thought they would do the same thing with Wonka, which that is not the case, because Wonka came out in December and I watched that sumbitch last month on Max. So, I mean, I guess it's like 3-ish months, I guess, like January, February. But it hit Max in late February. So it was still like 6 weeks, 2 months, something like that.
Yeah, it was a very quick turnaround. So let's talk about CinemaCon. I am going to give you the presentations, and I want you to tell me who you thought won the publicity cycle coming out of CinemaCon. So Disney presented Deadpool and Wolverine, Manoa 2, Mufasa the Lion King, Inside Out 2, and Alien Romulus. Lionsgate presented Michael the Ballerina, The Crow, and the Best Christmas Pageant Ever. Paramount put out Gladiator 2, If, A Quiet Place Day 1, and Transformers 1. Universal put out footage for Wicked, Despicable Me 4, and Twisters. And Warner Brothers put out Furiosa, Joker, and Beetlejuice. Who do you think had the best presentation in terms of media wins coming out of the con?
I'm trying to remember who I heard the most buzz about. I was intently focused on Warner Brothers because they had in their little listing an announcement from James Gunn. I'm like, oh, we're finally going to see Superman. Not see any shots or anything, but we'll finally see the damn picture of Superman. And that's what I was intently keyed up for. So that's the thing that sticks out to me the most. Spoiler alert, we did not get to see Superman. James Gunn is messing with my emotions.
Still is.
He still is. The fact that the anniversary passed last week and we didn't get a picture means that we're not getting a picture until May at least. And it is driving me nuts. I cannot believe they have not shot outside and somebody has not tried to sneak a picture. This is insane to me. He cannot possibly be going all the way to July without showing me what Superman looks like. There's no way on God's green earth that can possibly happen. I'm going to step back now because that gets me a little worked up. But to answer your question, I want it. I remember hearing the things about Lionsgate because I remember the stuff about the crow. And there was another one in Lionsgate that stuck out, but I cannot remember from your list or from what they said. But also Disney is Disney and they brought out Marvel and stuff. So I remember distinctly more the Marvel stuff and the Disney stuff. And
Furiosa
Wicked.
reactions were great.
Yeah.
Furiosa reactions were great. The Wicked stuff,
Oh.
like you said, was fantastic. And then the Lion King stuff with Barry Jenkins being like, yeah, a lot of my Moonlight people worked on this thing.
Yeah, that was a good little tidbit. Oh, the Fall Guy. The Fall Guy was a big hit at
Yeah, they screened it
CinemaCon.
in its entirety. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I can't wait to see that thing. What, that's 2 weeks before that comes out?
That's yeah, it's May 3rd.
Oh yeah, so that's next week. Next weekend. I'll be in there.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be one of those Hollywood insider movies where you're just either gonna like it or in love it for what it is, which is a love and an ode to stunt people, or you're just gonna find it funny, corny, and like not great. I think there's no in between with that particular movie. I did, however, see Gosling come out today and say, yeah, you want to we're not gonna probably get a sequel to The Nice Guys.
I saw that.
Because of Angry Birds. I tried to tell the studio that releasing us against Angry Birds wasn't the best idea. They thought it would be fine, and they crushed us. They got a sequel. We didn't. So that's how it goes in this business, basically.
That is disappointing because I did like Nice Guys. I'm gonna have to go watch that again here soon.
Yeah, I mean, like, my thing with that movie is like, if Shane Black wants to, Shane Black can make murder mystery novels out of those. He can do sequels. They can just be books.
That is not a
Comic books
bad
in his
idea.
case.
Yeah, not a bad idea. I can get down with that.
Yeah, and but the Furiosa stuff coming out of the CinemaCon was a big deal to me because I saw that trailer on a big screen over the weekend when I went to go see Abigail down in New Orleans, and fantastic movie, by the way. Bonkers, bonkers ending. It like the whole third act. I was like, okay, who read this script and approved this and thought that this would be a good idea? Because this thing, like, you remember, you were in the building for HBK versus Taker. You know how many false finishes that match has. Take that number and double it for Abigail. The entire third act. That's what it is. It's one twist after another twist on top of another twist on top of a lot of blood. But I saw Furiosa on a big screen, and man, that color palette, and it just, I instantly got transported back to that world of Mad Max and the Fury Road, and it just made me appreciate the fact that this man is in his late 80s, almost 90s, and we're not going to get very many more of these from him, so let's appreciate the ones that we do get.
Gotta be, how old is he? I want to say he's in the 90s. No, I'm aging him too much. He's just 79.
Oh, 79, we get, if Ridley Scott is any indication, we could get another 20 years out of him.
Yeah, he just turned 79
Yeah.
in March.
Yeah. The director of Babe, Pig in the City.
That will forever be wild to me.
The other thing, no, what will be wild to me is that Disney put out what was Gordy or whatever the opposite movie was
Was that
the
Disney
same
that did
year.
that?
Yeah, Disney did. It was so we had Bay Pig in the City, and we had, I think, Gordy or something.
I think it's
the same
Gordy.
year. It was the same year and the same, like, a month apart. It was kind of like that Deep Impact and Armageddon the same summer, both Asteroid movies.
It is it's Disney and Miramax. Oh, okay. But
Disney got in bed with Weinstein. Imagine that.
What year was that? So 94, yeah.
Yeah. I'd be willing to bet that's not one that's on Disney Plus.
I do not think so.
Along with, once again, none of the Ernest movies, even though they're all Touchstone movies.
I guess they can work out Ernest at some point, but
You should be open to it. And, like, there's an entire generation that grew up on those movies, and we're not going to get remakes because no one can do what he did. And, like, he died way too early, but he smoked like a freight train. And, like, I just think that if you put those on Disney Plus on their own little hub, there's only like 10 of them, and you put them out there and people watch them. Like, and it's not just Christmas, it's Halloween, it's goes to camp, it's goes to jail, it's plays basketball. Like, put all those out there, people gonna watch them, because people had a fondness for Jim Varney and what he did, in not just for Slinky Dog.
this is true. Yes, that is true.
So, the only other thing that I really wanted to talk about was, what is your most anticipated movie of the summer outside of Deadpool Wolverine?
That is a good question. Let me see. I was just
Because
looking.
Furiosa is mine. Like, I am hyped to go back to that world and the chrome and the bombast and the fury and the cars and all of it, and Tom Hardy maybe wandering around in the background somewhere. I'm ready to do that after almost 10 years. Right at 10 years. Because Fury Road was, I think, 2015, 2014. So.
Let's see. I'm trying to see a list of them. Animation guy, I will say Inside Out 2 is up there for me. That's probably going to be the answer because, of course, that'll be the one I know I see. What else is coming out this summer? Anybody want to give me a quick list?
Yeah, I don't really like I don't really care about Day One. I think it's unique that they're doing it, and Krasinski has the stroke to get these kind of movies made. But, like, I don't really see that as like a must see for me. Fall Guy, I definitely am gonna go make an effort to see,
Yeah.
and I'm definitely gonna make an effort to go see Furiosa. But anything outside of that, like, Deadpool and Wolverine. But I don't really have a solid, like, I need to go see that in June.
Not even the new Apes movie.
The new what?
The new Apes movie.
Apes. I'm pleased that they're doing it. That's, again, a May movie. I'll probably grab an early access screening to that. I'm just glad we're getting it, because I was terrified in 2019 when Disney bought Fox, that the Apes stuff was done, that they would relegate it to a TV series on Hulu or something. But the fact that we got a new movie, and if it does well, we could potentially get more movies. Because this movie, I think I read in the details, is 300 years after Caesar's death. So we're still not completely, like, into the Heston territory. Because the thing you have to remember with those movies is, those movies, the first one where Caesar becomes sentient, are done in the year that Heston allegedly goes into space, or that character goes into space. So, like, you're potentially working your way towards the originals, but there's such a large gap between where you start with Rise of the Planet of the Apes and where you get to with the original Planet of the Apes movie, that you could have a 300-year jump and there still be an excellent amount of time there before you get to Heston. So, Like, I'm really interested to see that movie and see if it does well, because they're going to tie this back to Caesar. It's going to be one of his descendants who has a heart and is like, humans don't deserve to be rounded up and killed. And the king's going to be like, no, bro, we the kings, we the ones who won the war. We beat them into submission. We own their asses. Let's hang them from the highest tree. And it's going to be a conflict of ideals, which is what Apes has always been.
Apes has never been my cup of tea. I've seen of the new trilogy. I've seen the first two. I've still never seen the third one. I mean, I like them, and I know people think they're good movies, so that's cool. It's just not something I ever have rushed out to
This
go to.
looks like it's on the same scale as what Reeves was doing
Right.
with his two movies, and that's what I appreciate about it.
Yeah.
That Disney gave him the budget and said, "Here, go and do." And they made a movie that looks like it's just as good as the two Reeves movies.
So it'll I don't know. Thinking of the rest of the movies, I guess it's really gonna be I'm very excited to see the Fall Guy. I loved the show as a kid, which is insane because the show started when I was born. But I remember that damn show. I remember the theme song. So I've been excited for this since I heard about it. Everything I've seen, I really like it. So I'm looking forward to seeing that, but I think the answer is going to be Inside Out 2 to see what they do and
Yeah,
how they
they
pull it off.
changed some new emotions because people were getting too sad. So we'll
Oh
see.
yeah. Some didn't make the cut because of that. Yeah, I'm especially because it kind of mirrors my daughter was younger than Riley was in the first movie. But they're around the same age. My daughter's probably a little bit older than Riley is in this one. So it's just kind of fun for me in that aspect to see how that goes because she identifies with the first one so much. I want to see how she reacts to this one. And I've already
Yeah.
made jokes about some of those new emotions and like, oh, so that's what that is. And she's not very appreciative of that. So I think that'll be fun. I know that'll be fun for me with her.
How long has it been since Riley's first date? Was that like 2018?
That sounds right. I always forget that happened. Oh no, that was 2015.
Yeah, that was a while ago.
Almost 10 years ago. Good Lord.
Well, I mean, it was about that long between them reviving up with the Doug Day stuff on Disney Plus. So shorts are kind of where they've helped things live, including Toy Story, over the years between movies.
Okay, so oh yeah, so Riley's first date was it was the same year as the first movie, so but still it just didn't seem that way. Wow.
Time flies, man. We're getting older.
Oh yeah.
That'll about do it for this week's episode of the Movies on the Brain podcast. If you want to keep up with the Liv Morgan revenge tour, you can follow me on X at BCW Tiger Fan as I annoy Chad to death with memes of Liv Morgan.
And you catch me on Twitter, not X, at The Mess Theory, because I refuse to call it that.
Thank you very much, and all hail the 15th anniversary of the drafting of Mark Sanchez.
I'm shutting this off right now.